Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered if you could get paid to write? Are you asking, what does comedy have to do with whining? Do you wish you could pursue your passion? Would you like to replace your boring life with excitement? Does your life ever seem to need a challenge? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, I would like to welcome you to BigMediaUSA.com. I'm January Jones, the wine tester, inviting you to enjoy my show, Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th Commandment. I'm your slightly eccentric host, and I want you to enjoy an eclectic experience today. My guest is Rocky Lang, the author of How I Broke into Hollywood and Confessions of Emergency Room Doctors, written with Dr. Eric Montero. Hi, Rocky. Welcome.
How are you? And I just want to tell you, I love the name of your show because I have in the house, we have a no wine zone in our house.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm trying to create a no wine zone for the world.
Yeah. Well, it's really good. You know, I was in an elevator at UCLA a few months back and with my two daughters, and In the elevator came John Wooden, the famous coach, which was my sort of hero growing up.
Uh-huh.
And Coach Wooden, I told him what an influence he had in my life, and he gave me this little card that I could put in my wallet, and basically in that one of his three rules was don't complain.
Okay. I know. I'm getting a lot of mileage out of my title. It's been fun. I've been looking forward to this interview ever since I read about your book, which is billed as Funnier Than Scrubs and Truer Than Grey's Anatomy. I want to tell my listeners a little bit about your bio. Rocky produced Ridley Scott's film White Squall, the Emmy, and also the Emmy Award-winning CBS miniseries Titanic, and a host of other features, television shows, and documentaries. He has worked with every major studio and network in Hollywood, and he lives here in L.A. with his wife and children. Rocky, where are you originally from?
I am actually probably one of the few people in this town of Hollywood that grew up, born and grew up in Hollywood.
Oh, my gosh. You are a rare creature.
I am. I actually do remember when it took 20 minutes to get anywhere in the city.
Oh, wow.
It takes 20 minutes for me to get down the block.
Well, now you can only do that at 3 in the morning.
Right.
Now, could you tell us a little bit about your education and your work experience?
Well, I was very fortunate that I grew up the son of two incredible parents, Jennings Lang and Monica Lewis Lang. My father was an executive at Universal for 35 years and made movies such as Earthquake and Airport. And
oh my gosh! So you were born into the business, so to speak.
Born into the business. My mom was a professional singer. She started at 16 with Benny Goodman out of the Depression, and she's extremely excited because my 16-year-old Nikki is also a singer and sang at the Monterey Jazz Festival and has a new CD out.
Oh my gosh, how wonderful.
And I grew up into this incredible world, and like many kids who I was very close to my parents and wanted to follow in their father's footsteps, and I chose a different direction, and my father was an executive and within the studio system and a producer, and I wanted to be a director.
Oh.
And I started making movies at 12 years old. In sixth grade, I'd read these books, and I'd take my Super 8 camera out and go make movies and turn them in as book reports, and that just sort of, I mean, without getting into the whole thing, I was at the Olympics at 17 working with the film crew, and then I made my first professional film documentary at 22. And then,
oh, wow. So you've really earned your stripes, so to speak.
Yeah, I started in camera rental houses. I started at the bottom, and I think the big break for me was when I spent a year with Sidney Pollack and Dustin Hoffman on Tootsie, and I documented a year of that entire film, which taught me more than any film school could do. And
oh, my gosh. That's what my next question was, your biggest break. Sidney Pollack, what a legend. How lucky you were to work with someone like him.
Absolutely. It was incredible because he gave me complete access. The idea of the documentary was to show what really happens with the director and the actor.
Mm-hmm.
And if your listeners remember that movie, I mean, it was a
fabulous.
It was a very interesting cast with Jessica Lange and Terry Garr and Bill Murray.
It was groundbreaking.
Yeah, and they all came from different methods of acting. So Sidney basically was the sun with these circling planets that all sort of had their own gravitational pulls on them. Bill Murray wouldn't even read the text, and he would be improvisational, and Jessica Lange didn't want to talk to anybody, and Justin wanted to talk to everybody. So, you know, it was crazy. But it was a great experience for me, and that ultimately led me into getting some assignments with Remington Steele as a director, and then I started to produce. And
Now tell me, as I'm not in the business, what is the difference when you look at being a director versus a producer? Which would you rather do? Which is more difficult?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer because each project has different meanings. I mean, for me, I would say that when I was younger, I loved directing because it was really forming the movie, and I'm a very creative person, and directing the actors and all of that. Once I had children, and then my older daughter was diagnosed with diabetes, I didn't want to be away very much. I wanted to be home and experience fatherhood, and I started to write more and produce more. So I'm going to actually direct a movie in January, and I just finished a movie for Lifetime as a producer. So it depends on, you know, what hat I'm wearing.
Oh, what an interesting career. Do you ever get writer's block when you're writing or putting something together?
I fortunately have never had writer's block. My problem is I don't have enough time to write all the things I want to write. And
you're so fortunate because I hear from so many writers that they get blocked. And my advice is just plow on, keep going, and keep writing, and something eventually will show up on the computer that you can use.
It's hard. I just finished a script, and I hit the second act. I got about 30 pages, and I was like, okay. And it was really hard for me to, I wouldn't call it a block, but it was really hard for me to decide the path that I wanted to take. And I followed exactly what you said. I just went, and I just kept writing, and all of a sudden the path found me.
Now, what about, who do you most admire? Which director do you most admire, and which producer do you most admire?
Well, that for me, I'm biased because I think that, you know, Sidney, for me, is a complete director because he may not be the most dynamic visualist like a Ridley Scott or Steven Spielberg as far as painting a picture on the canvas of film, but as far as a director who understands story and structure and acting and commercial value and artistic value and is really the complete guy, you know, just really the go-to.
He does some acting too, doesn't he?
He does the what?
Does he do any acting himself?
Oh, he's a great actor. He came out of the Neighborhood Playhouse with Sandy Meisner, and he's in my first book, How I Broke Into Hollywood. He's one of the interviews in that book.
Oh, wow.
That we did, and he'd always wanted to be an actor, and and essentially, when he came out here, I think it was Burt Lancaster said, "You're not good looking enough to be an actor, and you should be a director." And he was crestfallen, but he wound up directing, and now he's back acting again.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, he's come full cycle.
Right.
That's great.
His whole life, so it's pretty fascinating.
And now let's talk about producers. Which producer did you admire most? Or
well, I think that I have to go way back to before I was born to the guys like David O. Selznick because they were complete producers. Now the way the business works is that at least in the major studio system, there are not that many real producers. I mean, there's somebody who knows is a manager to an actor or knows the director, and the studio system is so geared up like a machine that those production entities of, you know, contracts and finding the money and all those are all taken care of, within the system. But
Someone once told me.
I can talk for hours on this.
Yeah, I'm very interested in this because someone once told me that if you wanted to get something done, that your first step was to get a good entertainment lawyer to represent you. Is that a factor?
I think that for me, it always comes back to the idea. If you don't, you can have the best entertainment lawyer in the world if you don't have a saleable product. So for me, the idea is king. You come up with the idea. And you develop that idea, and then you have something that's good, you know, screenplay or treatment or.
It always gets back to the writer, doesn't it?
It gets back to the idea and the original concept of what they want to do. And like for instance, White Squall, that we wound up getting made with at Disney with Ridley. I mean, it started with a conversation with my friend Todd Robinson, who on a seawall in Hawaii where a guy was sitting next to him, and he was at one of these, he's now in his 50s, and he was on the Albatross when it sunk in the Caribbean back in 1963.
Oh, wow.
And told Todd the story, and Todd came back and told me the story, and then I told the story to a studio.
And it's all about stories.
Right. Studio bought the project. And, you know, 2 years later, we had a movie out in the theaters.
It's always the story, and it's people like to hear stories about individuals and just little people. People always think it has to be someone famous. Well, not necessarily. When we come back, I would like to talk more about your Confessions of an Emergency Room Doctor book. And I'm curious to find out how you did your research on this book. And I'd like you to share some of your very humorous stories from the book. We'll be back in a few moments. January Jones, BigMediaUSA.com. Welcome back to The Wine Tester with January Jones on BigMediaUSA.com. My guest today is Rocky Lang, and he's just written an amazing book about doctors and emergency rooms. Now, Rocky, tell me why doctors and why emergency rooms?
Well, I think that your audience might find this interesting in a certain way, in that I was married, because it turns into sort of marriage and wives and husbands, is that I was married for 10 years to a doctor.
To a doctor?
To a doctor. Her name was Jeannie Brewer. Jeannie Brewer. She remains a very good friend of mine. And,
oh, good.
and over those years that we were married, she would have her medical students, because she was also teaching medicine at USC, and she'd have her students come over to the house, or we would go to dinner with her colleagues, and I would hear these outrageous stories of things that had happened in the course of these doctors' lives. And I kept copies of these stories. I'd write them down when I get home, and I'd store them in a file, thinking that I would use them in film narrative, meaning that you know, I'd have a scene in a doctor's office or something, and I would use one of these funny stories that would come out.
Okay.
So then after I'd written my diabetes books and I'd written the Hollywood book, my agent said, you know, do you have anything else you want to do? And I said, well, I have these all these crazy stories. And some of them were not crazy. Some were quite poignant and dramatic. But so Anders McMeel Publishers, they said, we love the idea and we would like to just do the funny ones and the crazy ones. So I said, well, that's cool. And so they said, can you get a doctor, though, to get a doctor to work with you on it, because it would really help with the sales? I said, sure. So I called Jeannie, my ex-wife, and and I'm remarried, and I knew I couldn't write it with her, but
smart.
Actually probably could have, but it was better that I did with her husband, because her husband's a cardiothoracic surgeon, and he's a friend of mine now.
Oh, my gosh.
So I said, Eric, would you, you know, help me with this? Would you? I'm going to need you to help me make some contacts with doctors and nurses, and he said, yeah, sure, I'll do it with you. So he was hugely helpful in getting a lot of the contacts that I needed in order to write the book. So, you know, here we are where, you know, I've written this book with my ex-wife's current husband.
Wow.
And funny enough, believe it or not, the movie I just produced for Lifetime, Racing for Time, which will be out in February, is written by my current wife's ex-husband.
Oh, my gosh. Small world.
And we've all sort of figured out that, you know, by putting the kids first, that it was really important that we all build these bridges to each other, and we've all figured out a way of, moving on through life.
That's wonderful.
So,
Racing for a Lifetime, what is that about?
Oh, the Lifetime movie is a true story about a guy, his name is, which Charles Dutton plays the lead role, and Charles is a prison guard at a youth authority, and what that is it's a prison for 12 to 20-year-old girls before they go to the big house, sort of their last stop, but it's a very, very serious prison. It's kids who've done murders, and they've had very serious issues.
Yeah.
So without making a long story into it, he instilled a track program in the prison.
What
he ended up doing is running rival gangs as relay teammates. So you had a Northern Cal gang that was sworn to kill a Southern Cal gang, and they wound up being on the same team. So what the evolution of the characters are is they wound up realizing that their teammates were more important than their gang affiliation.
Okay, and that was called Racing
It's called Racing for Time. It'll be out in February from Lifetime with Charles Dutton starring.
Okay, now did you write that script?
No, I produced that script.
You produced that?
That's written by my current wife's ex-husband.
Husband, okay. Yeah, so that's, for this one, you wore your producer's hat.
I wore my producer's hat. I did it with my partner, Diane Nabatoff.
Yeah, you're the man of many hats. Now, were you actually, going back to the emergency room
yes.
book, did you spend time in the emergency room yourself?
I've only spent time in the emergency rooms when I've had my shoulder reset from falling in accidents. But, no, I didn't spend a lot of time in emergency rooms researching. Mainly the research came from this book by contacting doctors, nurses, and lab tech and technicians and saying to them, you know, tell me the strangest things that happened to you. Tell me, you know, what's most memorable. And or having Eric, you know, talk to the nursing staff at his hospital, and then they would talk to friends, and they would start to send me stories.
Oh, wonderful. And then you collected them.
And those stories, as well as there's a whole news around the world section, which, you know, that I just basically culled all the newspapers across the country and the world and you know, found stories. And then
wonderful. When we come back, I'm going to ask you some of the strangest names of doctors or diseases, and I'd like to have you share some of your funny stories with my listeners. This is January Jones, BigMediaUSA.com. I'd like to welcome you back with my wonderful guest, Rocky Lang. And Rocky, would you share with my listeners how they can get your books and where they can find them?
Well, the book is in, you know, any bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Borders, you know, any of your local bookstores, or of course it's online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble online and a million other places, so Confessions of Emergency Room Doctors.
Okay, and How I Broke Into Hollywood.
Same thing. I mean, I don't know if it's still in print. I mean, I think you can still find it, but...
Well, I definitely want to find it because I'd be very curious to read it. It sounds like a fascinating journey that you've taken with your career.
It's a really empowering the book. Not to mislead you, it's called How I Broke Into Hollywood, but it's not about me. It's about people like Sidney Pollack and about...
Well, you actually were born in Hollywood.
Yes, I was.
You're a rare, rare creature. Going back to our book on the emergency room, could you tell me some of the strangest names that you've ever heard for doctors or diseases?
Well, there's a guy named, there are two doctors who shared an office called Doctors Tongue and Gums.
Okay, great.
Dr. James D. Cure.
Okay, and these are real names.
Real names. There's a urologist named Dr. Alden Cockburn.
Oh, no.
There's an ophthalmologist named Dr. Look. There's a pediatrician named Dr. Hurt. There's a doctor named Dr. Flash Gordon. And there's two doctors that I think actually worked here in the Valley in Los Angeles named Danny Thomas and Frank Sinatra.
Oh, wow.
And they shared an office, too.
That's interesting, you know, as you're reading these names off and they're so humorous, it jogs my memory. And as a child, our dentist, his name was Dr. Hertz.
That's right. there are a number of those. And there's one of the diseases that is quite strange. Excuse me for sort of butchering the pronunciation, but it's melocryptovestimentophilic.
And
that
what
is actually a disease where someone compulsively steals ladies' underwear.
Oh, my gosh.
So, it is going back to doctors, you know, the doctors have names for various doctors in the hospital. So, for instance, the rear admiral is really a proctologist.
Okay, got it.
And the stream team is the urology team. And the pediatron is the pediatrician.
And very
so
good.
There's a lot of that going on, as well as a lot of things such as, you know, some names such as like a healthy goober.
Okay.
You know what a healthy goober is?
No.
That's a dead patient.
Oh, no. A healthy goober. Wow.
And here's one. When you hear someone say, I fell on it, well, this is the answer that patients give for how foreign bodies get inserted into their body.
Oh, my God. I fell on it.
It's
not likely.
If you had a loop-the-loop done, that's a complicated surgical rearrangement of the intestines.
Oh, my gosh. And these are the things that the doctors throw back and forth. That the patients never, you know, I love this story about the lady who was bedridden. Could you share that with my listeners?
Do you have a page number on that?
No, I don't have the page
number. There's so many, to your listeners, there's just so many stories for me to pull. a single one out that you ask, it's a little hard for me to read. But I can tell you a story that I do like. A story that I do like, that there was a hospital it was a community hospital in a rural part of Los Angeles, and this guy we called the station wagon guy would come by. And station wagon guy was he had a station wagon, and it was a cooled station wagon. He would pick up unclaimed corpses, basically people who had died in these hospitals and no one came to claim them.
Oh my gosh.
And he only had room for a couple of corpses at a time. It was out in the middle of sort of nowhere, and he came by this hospital one night, and he had one stiff in the back, and he had room for one more, but there were two there, so he couldn't put them both in the car. So they said the doctor at the hospital said, well, come on back, and we'll give you. He said, I'm not coming back. It's take me another 2 hours to come back here. So he wheeled the second stiff out, and he put that guy in the front seat of the car, put the seatbelt on it, and drove off. So we call that story Station Wagon Guy, or it reminds me sort of Weekend at Bernie's.
That's great.
And we have another story in this thing, story about a couple was doing a sort of a sexual role playing game.
Okay.
And he dressed up as Captain America.
Okay.
He tied his wife to the bed. And he got up on the dresser and was going to jump to save her, but he overshot the bed and knocked himself out against the wall.
So now mom's
tied up. Dad's unconscious. And the teenagers come home from their evening.
Oh, no.
And have to open the door, and they both wind up going to the hospital. Dad's got a concussion and is out of it. And mom's been dehydrated. She's been yelling for the last 6 hours for somebody to come and get her. So, so we have a lot of fun stories that are quite amazing.
Well, that's extraordinary. That you couldn't make that up.
You couldn't, some of the stuff you just can't, and what people do to themselves, we have a story here, came out of England, of a 22-year-old soldier. He suffered internal injuries after lighting a small firecracker, and for some reason wanted to insert that into one of his orifices.
Oh, dear.
And it exploded.
Oh, wow.
And you start to ask yourself, why are people doing this to themselves?
And what's the answer?
I don't know. You've done a lot of talking about psychology and what drive people to do things. And there's that movie, Jackass, that had come out.
Oh, yeah.
Some people do things that are
unexplainable,
and other people, I started a story which I will tone down for your audience. But there was a woman who from the old country. She was from Hungary, and she had come into a doctor's office, and she was complaining of discomfort in her abdomen, and essentially what she had done is that in Hungary for prolapsed uterus you insert a potato up your vagina.
Oh dear.
And
wow.
This person did this, and it sprouted. And when it sprouted, she was embarrassed about it.
Of course.
She continued to let it fester to the point where the pain was so severe she was taken into the hospital.
Oh my gosh.
And there's this jolly green giant
growing.
And so in that situation, she was completely ignorant. She had done this. And there are other stories of people who do all sorts of other things to themselves that are crazy.
Oh wow. I mean that you couldn't make it up. It has to be true.
Yeah, and we have, let me see here if I have something here, another one that I think is funny.
Which is probably the scariest thing you've ever heard come out of the emergency room that as a patient gives you pause?
Oh, well, there's a story in the book. Most of the stories are funny, except that there we do have a story in the book that it's quite shocking. It's that a woman had come in for an elective procedure. I don't recall exactly what it was, and it was completely not necessary. And while she was under, they were doing some cauterization, and a spark hit an open line in the oxygen, and her face mask filled with fire.
Oh,
and it went
God.
Right down into her mouth and her throat and burned her. So of course they it's horrible, horrible. So now they took her to to the burn ward, and they're dealing something with that. And she had something else. They wanted to do a tap of her lung to see where this thing was. And while they did that, they hit the wrong vein, and she bled to death. this woman, you know, had gone, gone
elective.
one completely elective procedure,
mm-hmm.
and wound up dead. And it was just that story is just in the
chilling.
Book because it's so really dramatic of what
yeah.
had happened.
So chilling because you just lately we heard about in the news about another woman dying from elective surgery. Her son's a famous musician.
Right, the Kanye West story is.
Right, and it's like it's very scary to think that when you go in, something like that can happen to you.
There was a story just yesterday. I mean, people are still sending me stories, even though the book is
uh-huh.
a story.
Are you going to do another book, a volume two?
I would do another one because it just there's some of these stories are so fascinating. I mean,
uh-huh.
that came across. I mean, did you see the story yesterday about the tree man?
No. Tell me about that one.
It's an amazing story. I mean, you have to see a picture to really to visualize it. But this guy mm-hmm. in Indonesia had skinned his knees
mm-hmm.
when he was as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And he this virus, he had a suppressed immune system. This virus sort of infected his legs. And he sprouted literally like trunk-like warts out of his feet. And if you look at him, he literally looks like he came out of, like the Wizard of Oz or something. He's no feet or hands because they almost look completely like tree trunks. They've grown in no use. And he went into a freak show
uh-huh.
to earn money. It was just a horrible story. And apparently it was, from what I was told, it has some connection to the human papillomavirus. And they didn't know how to treat that, so there are American doctors going over there now to try to deal with it. But you'll never be normal. But the point of it is,
it's almost like
fascinating.
It's like Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Fascinating stories. This story of the little girl with the eight limbs that was in the news last week. Eight limbs in her body that she's fine. It was a 30-hour operation, and she's going to be okay. And then story of the little boy who was born with a tail, with a literal tail, like an animal tail.
Oh, I've heard things about that type of thing happening.
Right.
And that they can, fortunately now with the skill and plastic surgery, they can help
so
a lot
much,
of people.
So much with it.
Yeah. You know, when you were talking about, I'm sure people just send you all kinds of stories, because I'm kind of going through that with my book, Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, and people all of a sudden, no one will admit that they're a whiner, but of course they know everyone else who whines, and they always want to share stories with me about other people whining.
Whining.
Yeah, and it's like unbelievable, especially with this year coming up, with the next year with the elections and the war and the economy, and it's almost as if my next book is writing itself just from the news.
It's really hard. I mean, I don't have a lot of tolerance for whiners these days. I mean, when my daughter was diagnosed with diabetes, and it sort of changed my whole perspective because...
How long ago was that?
She's 6 years with it, but she's great control, and as I said, she's...
No, is this your daughter that's the singer?
Yeah, and she's doing amazing, but it just made me have such little tolerance because you live your life and you go, well, at least, my kids are healthy, and then all of a sudden, you have a kid who's sick.
Yeah, and then the people whine about such insignificant things.
Right.
And the reality is there's other people coping every day with things that would take most people down completely.
That's true. But here's something to whine about.
But.
Okay, I'll tell you, I would whine about this.
What?
The patient was undergoing an operation to remove a mole on his buttocks.
Okay.
He broke wind, caused a fire in the operating room, set his genitals on fire. Okay. That's something to whine about.
Now, this is a true story.
True story. Here's another one for you. Out of New Jersey.
Okay.
A doctor who graduated from a New Jersey medical school and now practices in Los Angeles pleaded guilty to stealing a hand from a school cadaver and giving it to his exotic dancer girlfriend.
Oh, what a gift.
The doctor kept the hand in the jar of formaldehyde in her bedroom in South Plainfield, and she called the hand Freddie.
Freddie.
The case is now pending while the doctor's free on bail. The stripper was charged with receiving stolen property.
Oh, wow. What a great story that is. Now, when we come back for our last segment, I'd like you to go through some of the funniest test answers that were given by medical school students.
Okay.
Because these are such clever people studying, and they're the ones who are going to make such a difference in our lives. And I know they all have great sense of humor. Speaking of humor, have you ever done stand-up? You seem to have done everything
No, I haven't done stand-up.
You haven't.
Thank God I haven't done stand-up.
Okay, that's kind of the ultimate test. That's the kind of thing that we'll leave to Robin Williams. We'll be right back with Rocky Lang, my guest, on BigMediaUSA.com. Welcome back to The Wine Tester with January Jones on BigMediaUSA.com. And my guest today is Rocky Lang, and he was going to share with you some of the funniest test answers given by medical students. Could you tell us about these, Rocky?
Okay, here we go. These are the answers that came from pre-med students around the world.
Okay.
Okay, the general question here. The body consists of three parts, the brainium, the borax, and the abdominal cavity. The brainium contains the brain, the borax, the heart, and the lungs, and the abdominal cavity, the bowel of which there are five, A, E, I, O, and U.
Okay.
Respiration. When you breathe, you inspire. When you do not breathe, you expire.
Okay. Very good.
Cardiovascular. The three kinds of blood vessels are artery, veins, and caterpillars.
Okay.
I'm telling you. Okay. I write this stuff. Hematology. Before giving a blood transfusion, find out if the blood is affirmative or negative.
Okay.
Okay. But here's some medical record stuff.
Okay.
Actually, with the existing doctors, those are pre-med. These are existing doctors.
And this is true.
True stuff from
true
medical
stories.
Records.
Okay.
The patient was alert and unresponsive.
Okay. That's a hard thing to do.
When she fainted, her eyes rolled around the room.
Okay.
The pelvic examination will be done later on the floor.
On the floor. Okay.
He was divorced last April. No other serious illnesses.
Oh, wonderful. That's a great diagnosis.
That's right. The patient was advised not to go around exposing himself to other people.
Absolutely, or we'll end up in jail.
That's right. The baby was delivered, the cord clamped and cut, and handed to the pediatrician, who breathed and cried immediately.
Okay.
Okay. This one. Exam of genitalia reveals that he is circus-sized.
Okay.
She stated that she had been constipated for most of her life until she got a divorce.
Oh, wow. What a great cure for divorce.
Okay. Between you and me, this is from one doctor to the other. Between you and me, we ought to be able to get this lady pregnant.
Oh, okay. No problem.
So,
when you're going through all of this and you're having such a wonderful time doing it, and it sounds like writing comedy is your forte or sharing comedy, how do you feel about sharing your career with your children? Do you encourage them to follow in your footsteps?
I actually don't. Them to follow their passions.
Ah, okay.
Not that I would discourage them. In fact, that Nikki, my older one, the singer, is embarking on the same sort of road that I am, in that it's so speculative, and that when you want to be a director, or you want to be a writer, or you want to be a producer, or you want to be a singer or an actor. It's not a meritocracy for the most part. It's timing, luck, and talent, and a lot of the forces of the universe that conspire either against you or for you.
Absolutely.
She's passionate. She's done it since she was six. It's her life.
They're born with it, aren't they?
She's born with it. My stepchild is, got her own talents, and my other daughter has her own talents, and I don't think that. There's been no interest, as far as I can tell, from any of the kids about the entertainment business, as far as movies or.
Well, they probably have seen a side of it that most people don't see. They have probably seen the side that's not that glamorous.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that that's it. It's possible because living in this Hollywood area, it's not that big of a deal.
Right.
I mean, for me, if I can. Like hang out with a politician or a sports figure.
That's exciting.
I'm a lot more excited than if Brad Pitt comes in the room for me. Oh, okay.
There's Brad. Yeah.
I understand why there's so much interest, outside of this world. But I think growing up in it, I realized that there's, these are normal people for the most part,
doing their job,
their thing.
Yes, trying to get through the day
the nice
just like everyone else.
Nice ones.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to also mention to my listeners that you have won an Emmy, and what an exciting thing for your career. And I'm so glad that you were able to visit with us today. This is January Jones signing off. I'm the author of Thou Shalt Not Wine, The 11th Commandment. And my guest today has been Rocky Lang, and he's the author of Doctors in Emergency Rooms. And we'd like to thank you so much for visiting with us.
Thank you, January, very much.
And I'd like all my listeners to remember to stop whining, start smiling, and if that doesn't work, you better start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. This is January Jones signing off with Cheers and Chocolate. Bye-bye.